You're now listening to Mixed Mental Arts with Brian Callen and Hunter Motz.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Mixed Mental Arts. And it is my great pleasure to have on the podcast Kate Fogarty. Now, if you don't know who Kate Fogarty is, nor did I until a few months ago, but she's just one of the many people who has stepped forward to help move this Mixed Mental Arts project forward. Kate, welcome on the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so jazzed, actually, to be here. This is my podcast debut.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth giving people a little bit of context on, you know, firstly, why did you want to get involved in Mixed Mental Arts? And, well, why don't we just start there?
Okay. So I wanted to get involved with Mixed Mental Arts because I wanted to change other people's minds. And I met you at a talk that you gave at Second City, and that was kind of one of the things that you had said about, you know, making America purple again and convincing other people how to see other sides of the debate. And I was like, that sounds good, because I'm sure that I'm right and everybody else is wrong, but I'm going to figure out ways to bridge the gap. And so that's what drew me in. And then total head fake, I realized it ended up changing my mind probably more than I've changed anyone else's mind.
Well, I think that's usually the first step, right?
Yeah.
but that talk at Second City was very interesting for me because it was interesting who resonated with it and who came forward. And that was sort of the first time that I realized that there's a reason usually why some people get what Brian and I have been talking about quickly, and some people are less likely to get it. So why don't we have your cultural confession, Kate Fogarty?
Okay, so I was born in Minnesota. You'll hear it come out every time, every once in a while. I've dropped the accent mostly, but every once in a while it appears. I was born in Minnesota when I was 12. My parents probably had a plan, but they didn't share it with me, just said we were selling everything, and we moved to Florida, bought a sailboat, moved to the Caribbean, lived there for 2 years, and then moved back to Minnesota. And then fast forward, I moved to Alaska. I moved to Chicago. I know that Alaska is a state. And then I moved to Oslo, Norway, lived there for 3 years, and then moved straight from there to Los Angeles. So, I've had a cornucopia of living experiences, and my dad comes from basically rednecks, and my mom comes from Swedish small town Wisconsin people. And so, there's been that with them. And then also just, you know, moving back and forth between the United States and other countries and, you know, picking things up along the way.
So my mother was very excited because one of the things you've been doing on Mixed Mental Arts is the knowledge bombs,
mm-hmm.
which is really just taking, it's very interesting. So David Sloan Wilson has this thing, the science to narrative chain. And so David is, you know, up at the far end of the science chain. And then Brian and I are sort of a couple of steps down, but I am a recovering scientist. So when mm-hmm. I write things, I have a tendency to be 3,000-4,000 words long. And it is that nervous science culture of wanting to be exhaustive and cover everything. But then at the same time, I've spent enough time with Katie O'Brien that I know that they actually need to be turned into stories and they need to be accessible and relatable. And then what's great is that, you know, you then take those 3,000-4,000 word pieces of unrelatable material and turn it into these 500 word knowledge bombs. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what your goal is with your knowledge bombs and how you're thinking about them when you're writing them?
So, I know that we, myself included, we've given you some, guff about how long your pieces are, but, I think first of all, it's important to acknowledge that that's what drew people in originally. People were drawn to the way that you framed things, and that was really beneficial. And now we're just trying to expand it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people that just don't have that kind of attention span, maybe don't have enough of the, understanding to rise to that level. And so I am just making it a little more digestible for people.
which is great. And I think the key thing is that I appreciate that guff, because, you know, we all have culture, and that culture is good at some things. So I feel pretty comfortable going and wading into the science. But the problem is that that makes me not necessarily the most effective communicator in terms of breaking these things down in short, accessible pieces. So what this, I think that this really gets to the heart of why Brian and I have been so focused on making this a real wisdom of the crowds effort, because it really is going to take a bunch of people coming from different places, and it's a relay race. And, you know, I'm just one link in the chain. Like, there are all these guys out there like John Hite and David Sloan Wilson and Joe Henrich and, you know, Jennifer Jacquet and the hundreds of other scientists that we've had on there. And by the way, those hundreds of scientists are then summarizing the work of hundreds of thousands of scientists. So it's a relay race. And the point is it's my pleasure to, write something that is accessible enough that people like you get it, and that, you know, Katie O'Brien gets it, and that Brian gets it. But then it's there's the translation work of, you know, Katie O'Brien did the translation work that of what led to the Straight A Conspiracy. You're doing the translation work into these knowledge bombs. And then, you know, there's going to come a magical moment where Brian Callen, you know, it's already seeped into his comedy, but when it really becomes, like, when it fully infuses his comedy, then we're going to really be off to the races. And people writing songs, Nate McCabe, who's doing the Belt System, says that it's already been influencing his music. And it's when we start to really get these ideas remixed into the pop culture, that's when we get real change. But this is not why my mother was so excited. My mother was so excited because your last name is Fogarty.
Oh.
And she said, oh, you know, and she told me something about how my grandmother was a Fogarty or a great grandmother, and she's, you know, pretty common name, probably not related. Da, 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 da. But so yeah, apparently there's, I didn't know this, but apparently there's a Fogarty. My mother's name is McNeil, but apparently there's a Fogarty beyond that, and it's all very much the same migration patterns.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that even though you're a Fogarty, that's not really culturally what you are, is it?
No, not so much. I remember, so when I was younger, you know, it's in Minnesota, it's not cool to be Swedish. Everybody's Swedish. Everybody's Norwegian. It's just, it's not exotic. It's not interesting. And so, my grandfather on my dad's side, heavy drinker, dyed his beard green every, St. Patrick's Day, like big thing, Irish Catholic family. And so I was always like, yeah, we're Irish and all this stuff. And then my dad one day was like, we're not really that Irish. We're like barely Irish. Like, our name is way more Irish than we are. And I was like, oh, and he's like, we're actually Swedish. And I was like, oh. It was so disappointing.
Yeah.
Cause my grandmother's name is on my mom's side is Elizabeth Olsen. And then on my dad's side, his grandmother was Elizabeth Olsen. So.
The Olsen twins.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get much more Scandinavian than Olsen.
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
But that's interesting that the culture of cachet is Irish in the upper Midwest.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are Swedish holidays, but they usually involve like disgusting fish or bland food. I mean,
I suppose the Irish holidays, which involve potatoes, cabbage, and corned beef.
I love potatoes.
Yeah, no. Listen, and I do too. It's great stuff. But there was this revelation and this realization. And Brian, on the last podcast that I did with Brian, you know, we were talking about Brian was very excited that he got back his 23andMe profile.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out that Brian has fast twitch muscles. And this, to Brian Callen, this is the most important thing he could find out about his own genotype. But there's, I think this all sort of pokes up or points up this, you know, there's like our genes, which come from whatever background. Then there's sort of the outward presentation of our culture, our Fogartiness. And then there's what are our values? What are our beliefs? What are our cultural practices? And, you know, you have this great story about, you know, how you first realized that you were secretly Swedish, as you wrote on mixedmentalarts.co.
Yeah. So, I was like 7 or 8 and I wrote an essay in school about my grandma being the nicest person ever. And I showed my mom and I thought she was going to be really excited. It was her mother. And she was like, oh, this is nice, but actually your grandmother's not the nicest person ever. And then she started showing me letters that my grandmother had written, like gossiping about other people and like all this stuff, just to let me know that, I guess my grandma was human, but also it was just very weird. And, I remember a teacher in school talking about her Finnish mother, who I think actually came from Finland. And when she was an adult, one time she read this book and it said something about this character realizing that her mother wasn't crazy. She was just foreign.
Mm.
She was just from a different culture than the one that her daughter was growing up with. And so that's what my teacher realized about her mother, because she just, like, her mom would do things that were just so weird to her. And so I've started to realize that about my own family as well. It's like, well, why, you know, did they do that? Why do I sometimes get so jealous of people when they do something good? And it's never ended a friendship. It's never gone that far, but I feel that. And then I'm like, oh, maybe it's because I'm Swedish.
Yeah. And so break that down, because Martin Totland, who again is someone that I've never met, but is in Bergen, Oslo, where, you know,
Bergen.
which, by the way, for reasons, I went to Bergen, with a buddy of mine from college, and a few things happened that were really important in my life there. One, I ate whale for the first time.
Oh.
Two, it's just like, you know, if you find Scandinavian people attractive, that is the epicenter of attractive Scandinavianness.
Yeah.
And then they also, weirdly, this is a thing that I was, you know, the Hanseatic League Museum is really good. So the Hanseatic League was this massive trading empire that operated all throughout the Baltic and the North Sea. So it's very fascinating in terms of like a trade thing. But the other thing which is really fascinating to me is they have amazing froyo, or like amazing soft serve ice cream.
I never had that when I was there.
Yeah, it was like a Mr. Softy type thing. And, you know, for some reason, I don't know, we'd heard that this was really good. And we were like, come on, really? Like, we're
just in Bergen or in Norway in general?
In Norway in general. Oh. And I guess it's because of that good, you know, non-GMO dairy, or it's not even GMO. It's like whatever it is that we do that makes our, you know, the chemicals we put in after the fact. But for some reason, and it was delicious, it's the best soft serve I've ever had.
That's so funny. I had Norwegians tell me that when they would leave Norway, they would miss the milk.
Yep.
They would miss Norwegian milk. And I was like, I don't get it, but.
So Martin wrote this article about Swedish jealousy and Jantelagen.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
So, it's basically, it's from this short story that this guy wrote, this Danish guy, about this fictional town. I think the town was called Janta, and all these rules that they had. You are nothing, you're no more important than anyone else, basically the same thing on and on. And I don't think the story I've never read it, but I don't think the story goes into Swedish jealousy specifically.
No, but it's Danish focused, but
yeah, but it's just, it's been incorporated into Scandinavian culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they're very much, you know, we don't stand out. Nobody's more important. You go to IKEA in Oslo and the Prince of Norway is shopping in line, like standing right next to you.
Yeah.
And if he didn't do that, if they shut it down, like there would be an uproar in Norway. He would just be an outcast, because how dare you? You're no better than anybody else, even though you're the prince.
Prince, yeah.
And it was the same thing. I mean, I always joke that Norway was a good setup for Los Angeles, because there's famous people all over the place. It's a small country, so a lot of people are on television, or, you know, musicians or whatever, and you would see them all over the place, and they were just normal, just walking around like everybody else. And so that's just part of their culture. And, you know, there's a lot of good things about that. Like, they don't have paparazzi for the most part. They, are very equitable towards each other. But then the flip side is this whole idea of Swedish jealousy. And, oh, if you start to talk about your accomplishments, or if you brag or whatever, then it's just this overwhelming feeling of animosity towards the other person. And I think, the guy that you're speaking
to,
Martin.
Martin. Who's half Swedish, half Norwegian, I should register. So I think that's part of it, is that he probably
I think there's probably a lot of half half
Swedish, yeah, half Norwegian.
But he wrote about how he had some friends, you know, that stopped speaking to him for a while or something because they thought he was getting too uppity.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's the other thing that's interesting and I think is worth noting is that Martin, you know, was saying, and part of what all this research shows is that this actually comes out of Viking culture. So this is a very, very old cultural trait that has persisted for years and years and years. And everybody should read Martin's piece. It's very well done. And I think Martin is going to record the audio of it. And we're going to start doing that so that you don't have time to read the blogs, then they'll be there on the audio feed and you can consume it more easily. But the, part of it is that they had this very collectivist mindset where, you know, and there are all these concepts, they're related concepts like Jantelagen in Denmark. Lagom is about being enough, and, you know, not too much, not, you know, Swedish jealousy. There are all these different related concepts that are all basically around maintaining the group cohesion, which was incredibly important in that environment in terms of raiding parties where you want the raiding party to function as a unit. And that means it's very much like any military unit. You know, you want the cohesion. You don't want anybody starting and going off and doing their own thing. And so that culture has persisted for well over 1,000 years. And the external parts of it have changed. But I, you know, not to speak too much for Martin, but I've known more than one Swede who has felt stifled by that culture. And in a sense, my father, even the Dutch culture, because there is, and Mitch Evers wrote a nice post about the Dutch culture, but it is very much for the Dutch, it's, you know, you need to work together because of the dikes and, you know, the polders and all of that. And so what happens is that becomes stifling. And so then they gravitate towards, they flee these countries because they gravitate towards places like America and England, where they have the ability to sort of stand out.
Yeah.
And be an individual and innovate and, you know, drive for all of these different things. But so it's interesting because you've moved all over these places, but part of it is that you've been moving in this, there's obviously the Caribbean experience and the Floridian experience, which is very different, but you've sort of gotten to see both the mother country, right? The sort of the origin of this Scandinavian mindset and then the offshoot, which is Minnesota.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, I have so much love for Norway. Like, I'm not, well, we'll find out. My sister's going to do one of the ancestry.com things, but as far as I know, we're not Norwegian, but that's where I lived. I didn't spend as much time in Sweden, but I had a lot of Swedish friends because there's a lot of Swedes that live in Norway. But it helped me understand Minnesota a lot more, where I'm from, the Midwest, how people can be very negative sometimes. Like if you start talking about something that you want to do or, you know, I was going to move to Los Angeles and I had so many people tell me how terrible it was going to be. They'd never been to Los Angeles, but they were just so sure it was going to be so terrible. And
now, why do you think they do that though?
I don't know, actually. Like, I guess
I
it could be.
I think that's the point. I don't think they know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's maybe part of that keeping a group mindset going. You know, we don't want people to stray.
Exactly.
You know, I think you're right. Like, I think for the most part, people don't really know. And it's not that they're necessarily mean about it. Cause if you start to engage them a little further, they're like, well, you know, you're right. I don't know. And.
Yeah.
You know, very pleasant.
Well, and I think that's the point. It gets to that what you're talking about with this novel and your teacher's experience, where a lot of this behavior can seem mean, but what you realize is these are blind cultural intuitions that people are just playing out again and again. They're old scripts, and they don't even realize that they have these old scripts. And it is, you know, culture binds and blinds. But I mean, I just increasingly, the level of insanity that you have these cultures that are many thousands of years old and the symbols around them may have changed. There may have been some changes, but a lot of those core values have just, they've never really been examined. They've never been reflected on and people haven't ever really taken the time to be like, what did I pick up? What is driving this choices? What is that behavior about? Why do I have this jealousy? Wait, that's Swedish? Wait, that's from the Vikings? Like, this is insane.
Well, and that's the gift of traveling or moving around. When I lived in Norway, I worked at this place where everybody that worked there was an immigrant. Mm-hmm. So we had, I think, like 12 Chinese people, one Japanese person, Croatian, one Swede, a German, me. And we were all, and this woman from Spain, and we were all kind of thrust into this teeny tiny break room about the size of this table, you know, like, I don't know, 20 square feet or something. And there was a lot of culture clash constantly. I mean, a knife fight broke out in the break room between the two different groups of Chinese people. And it was, you know, this whole thing that had come over from China with them because they worked at a place in China and they came over and they still brought that with them. But, you know, I remember the Spanish woman telling the Chinese that they were very rude because they would tell her that she'd gained weight and she would get so mad. And then I remember the Japanese woman telling the Chinese people that they needed to eat with their mouths closed and like different things like that. And so, and you know, we would all say, we're not being rude. We're not being weird. But then when you're thrust with people that are different than you, it's like, well, we're being different. And why are we being that way?
And what do we want to do?
Yeah.
I think is the key thing is, okay, now we've realized that this is old cultural baggage. What system do we want to choose?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the of course, you know, when we've talked about holistic cultures on this podcast before, a lot of what we focused on is sort of that big difference of East-West.
Mm-hmm.
But part of what we're now exploring and looking at the Scandinavian example is that you're seeing that there are, you know, variations obviously within the West. So America is much more individualistic, much more atomistic than, say, Scandinavia, which is much more holistic. And there are variations within all of that. So this all sort of gets to a larger point that has, I think, been important to draw out and which segues into what is the major focus of what we were going to talk about today. I wanted to introduce people to you, let them get to know you. But this gets down to, you know, sort of narratives. And there are many stories that we can tell. And I just was with Chris Ryan, who wrote Sex at Dawn, and we were talking about in terms of Darwin, that part of Darwin's real evolution in terms of understanding evolution was realizing that he spent 7 years studying barnacles. And in that process, he comes to just be reminded that species are these buckets or categories that we make up to be able to make the vast complexity of nature digestible to our brain so that we can have some frame of reference. But that as you look at the boundaries, you come to find that there are, it's not such neat white lines, right? So the boundaries don't necessarily work. So Brian and I are just trying to give everybody here, and I really should stop saying Brian and I, what the Mixed Mental Arts community is trying to offer to the world is we're trying to offer basically different frames and different narratives to make sense of this. So we're looking at East and West, but of course there are variations within that. If you were to look at, you know, okay, so there's the East, right? There's, and you're going to find some of these holistic ideas like the nail that stands up gets hammered down, which is the Japanese one, very much like Yantilogan. The lotus duck gets shot, which is the Chinese version. That's not great for innovation. And then, but there are going to be variations within that. So the Uyghur culture is going to be, you know, is much more rough and ready, right? The Mongols are a herder culture. So you're going to find that none of these categories is perfect. And we're not saying that these categories are perfect, but it's really just to be able to give people a way to start to talk about these things, have some stories to gravitate on. And there's a big topic that we've never really waded into. And both Katie O'Brien and Kate Fogarty have wondered why we haven't talked about this. The two Irish women have said, listen, there's something you're not saying here. And that thing is sexism. So let's talk about sexism.
I thought we should say we're going to talk about sex.
Oh.
Ism.
Oh.
No, I don't know.
But so, yeah.
Well.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, first of all, I can feel everybody's just like tension go up. Mm-hmm. As soon as you say sex, we're going to talk about sexism. And especially for men, and probably especially for white men, they feel afraid. I think they get afraid and they get defensive.
We're about to be in trouble.
Well, well, I think we need to figure out a way that we can just talk about it and everybody can just relax. And you can't talk about it with everybody. There's some people that want to yell and go for it. But I think that we should figure out a way that we can all talk about it. We can express our feelings about it. We're not going to solve it, but we can at least keep it from being the taboo. The taboo that we're going to talk about.
Now, it's amazing. One of the biggest things that has come out of doing this podcast is that I now know all my verbal tics and all my weird things. There's vitamin, there's bean, there's, you know, I already know that I failed Rupert's challenge. So I've been challenged by a Norwegian mixed mental artist to try and go a whole day without saying, you know. I've failed that many times today. So today is a wash. So we have to wait for tomorrow.
That's because you're the only one on the block. Like, I feel like to really end sexism, they should really just put yours and mine together and just, cause otherwise that's not fair.
But I think I think the first thing to realize in terms of, something to build off of something very important that you said, I think there are people who are going to want to shout about sexism. There's the men's rights activists, mm-hmm. and then there are the sort of very intense, the ones who give feminism a bad name, mm-hmm. right? Because feminism, there's such a spectrum. What do people mean by it? And it's one of these things where I have these conversations about things like capitalism or libertarianism or feminism. And I just constantly realize, oh, we're using this word in entirely different ways.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first thing to realize. And then I think the second thing to realize is that there's, and this was part of what is particularly helpful about Chris Ryan, is talking about hunter-gatherers. Mm-hmm. Because hunter-gatherers have these very equitable gender relations. And the point is that it's this experience of agriculture that in various ways has screwed us up. So again, it's important to realize that we've picked up, in the same way that we've picked up Swedish jealousy or a holistic mindset or an atomistic individualistic mindset, that's things that we've all picked up. And we're now, as a species, in that break room around that tiny 4x4 table.
Watch out, knife fight about to break out.
Well, there are knife fights happening. And so it just is sort of part of the reason why we haven't waded into that conversation. There's a fear of getting into trouble and just how hot button that is. There's also the fact that Brian has a particular button on, gender denial or mm-hmm. denial of gender differences by certain feminists. Mm-hmm. But the other thing too is a lot of it is that there's not a tidy narrative around sexism.
Yeah.
And so that's a big part of it. So, just to understand why, but we're now at a stage where we really want to take this thing out into the world. And so part of that is bringing people like Kate in, having a diversity of voices, and let's just deal with all the emotional and cultural baggage.
Yeah.
So tell us about the plow thing and what your satisfaction and dissatisfaction is with that.
I heard about the plow from you. Of course, no. So I guess the way that you explained it to me was, that prehistory, very long time ago, agriculture was invented, and then there became the need for a plow to increase production. And when the plow was invented, some people feel that that might have been the reason that sexism became prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
I like to know the history of things, but at like my first initial reaction when you said that or wrote me that email was just kind of like, huh? Like, I guess how I was like, okay, well, that doesn't help my life now.
Right.
So how do we figure out how to make that part of the story, or does it need to be part of the story? I don't know.
Well, so the reason why I think it does help your life now, even if it's not immediately obvious why it does, and sort of you know, there are lots of people who have tried to have a conversation about culture.
Mm-hmm.
Humanity has been trying to have conversations about culture more and less successfully. And some of those cultures include the conversation around imperialism and colonialism, where the conversation was, our culture is better. Yours is cute. And then, you know, there has been the conversation around culture post-World War II, where it was like, la, 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 we're not going to pretend that cultural differences matter.
Yeah.
We're going to pretend that, oh, these are just differences and we have cultural relativism. And then there's sort of the Sam Harris approach where, you know, we're going to quote a bunch of statistics and then, you know, paint this picture of Islam that does not fit my experiences of the Arabic world or the Islamic world. So there have been all sorts of approaches to having conversations about culture. And I don't claim to have the approach. I claim that if we can draw enough people in that we can evolve an approach that will work. But my current thinking in terms of how these things work is that the most important thing in terms of moving past your own culture, being able to deal with it, is understanding why.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about that experience of, you know, that author or your teacher or any of the experiences that we've all sort of been having around this material, it's understanding why I do these things, why I behave the way I do. And then what happens in understanding that I just sort of blindly picked it up from my environment, these things are very old, and then you begin to have the opportunity to, it doesn't become so precious, we don't have to be defensive. Like, why should I feel, it's not my fault that sexism exists, but it is my responsibility, once I understand it, to do something about it. The same thing with racism or whatever it is. It's that opportunity in the break room where you've come together. You now understand, oh, we're running in a bunch of old cultural software. What do we do about it? But part of, I think, what helps that transition is understanding where it came from and why it made sense in some senses back then and why it doesn't make sense now. So that's why I think the plow is relevant.
Okay.
But again, I think the point is that it's ultimately whatever works, right? So it's going to be different things for different people.
Yeah, I mean, if the plow plows people in or whatever, I don't know, like gets them in, like that's great.
But so, and part of it is that in terms of this untidiness, there's the plow narrative, which is, you know, you move from this balance between hunter and gathering where, you know, everybody's bringing in food calories. Most of the food calories are coming in from women. And then gathering, and then men occasionally go out and they get these very rare and scarce meat calories from hunting. And then the plow comes on, and then now it's suddenly about physical brute strength. And so the men are out in the fields and the women are in the house. But then there's this extra complexity of herding cultures, where herding cultures, there's this sort of extra defensiveness and women tend to be treated like livestock. And, you know, that's the whole mentality that develops.
So did that arise separately from?
It's a different form of living. And then again, I mean, this is where we start to get into real problems with narratives, is these aren't tidy narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to find local variations. And even when we talk about things like hunter gatherers, you know, there's a huge variety in how sex relations happen. My favorite, is the, and this, I get this from Sex at Dawn, maybe? Yeah. But the Aceh believe that a pregnancy is something that is cumulative. So what ends up happening is that, you know, the man's sperm has to build the baby. And that if you build from many different fathers and they acquire all the positive attributes of all the different fathers. So the women are going around and you ask the children who their father is and they'll say, oh, these 5-6 guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are all sorts of different beliefs. So none of this is tidy narratives. I think the main thing is, do we provide some way in for people to even start having conversations about this? What is it that breaks that awkward ice? And even sort of gets people to start to realize and reflect on those things. But again, whatever helps.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was thinking about, before, like up to this podcast, you know, it's fine for me to say, I am not going to be angry, unnecessarily angry at anybody. I can have a conversation, but I can't guarantee that every person on the planet is going to do that. And so, you know, it'd be nice if we could all just have a big hug and be like, okay, let's just start over.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think variety is probably the best idea. Like if the plow brings you in, great.
Yep.
If, something else does it, even better. And then even better if the plow and the other person start talking and they can figure it out.
And I think that's the key thing is that, you know, really the point of mixed mental arts is to carve out, you know, a basket of reasonables.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants to have this conversation and is coming from a place of like, listen, I got cultural baggage. I got emotional baggage. I don't fully understand it, but I believe that because so much of it is that you need people, you know, it's the information is too disorganized. It's, mm-hmm. there's not a way for people to be able to easily find those ways in. And so you have to organize it enough that you can draw in the next round of people. And then now you have the larger group and you can organize it and flesh it out better and make it more accessible. And then so on and so forth. And you just keep on, much like an Aceh baby, we just keep on, mm-hmm. you know, it is a child of many fathers and mothers. And you have to just keep building it and building it and building it. And I think that's the point is, because part of the experience that I had is just at a certain point, you accept that you guys are all nuts. Right.
Yeah.
Like you guys are all running old cultural baggage. You don't know how to make sense of any of this. And nor do I. But the reasonable thing to do is to now sit and figure this out and do that sort of reset where you're like, okay, we've got all these cultures from all over the world. How do we fit all of this together into something better? And I think what's cool is that particularly, I mean, you know, we're sitting in Andrew Hunt's space. Here in Hollywood, and you know, we've got equipment that I bought on Amazon, you know, and we're able to do this and then share this with the world. And if the world likes this, great. And if the world doesn't like it, great. You know, but yeah. we can
try again later.
Yeah, exactly. And we can keep on iterating and iterating and doing it better. So, and that's true with everything that we have been offering and that we will continue to offer. And in the same way, I think that's the spirit in which, you know, the knowledge bombs are written.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I mean, I think once people start building up these ideas in their head, like, okay, it's okay to make mistakes because you can be growth mindset. And we know that it's better to be growth mindset because you will achieve more, learn faster, do all these different things. So if you start doing that and applying that to every situation, not just math and science, but relationships, cultural discussions, things like that, it's going to start improving things. And the same with Descartes' error and Dunbar number, like all of these things are related.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's hard for, you know, those of us that grew up mostly Western in this atomistic whole idea of things to see how these are all interrelated, but they are. And the more that you build it up, you'll just have this background knowledge that you can apply to everything, even super scary topics like sexism.
Yeah. And I think crucially I think there's a great parallel here. I did not set this up, but if we think about seeing that narrative of Swedish jealousy,
mm-hmm.
it gives you a narrative through which to make sense of those emotional reactions. Now, maybe that jealousy has nothing to do with Swedishness, right? It could be that it comes from a totally different place or whatever, but it doesn't really matter because that narrative is helpful in making sense of it. So in the same way, people have emotional reactions around gender or race or whatever. And do they really come from whatever narratives we're offering up? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But they're a way to be able to sort through those emotions and then train new emotional responses.
Now I understand the plow.
Yeah.
Now I get it. Because I think the plow for me isn't that interesting of a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody else who... one reason or another, it resonates with them. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there will be a million competing stories, and what we're aiming at here is not, I think that, and this is part of my own recovering, you know, weird scientist mindset, is that there's an idea, and this is something that the other Kate Katie O'Brien, and to help trait me out of. But there's this idea that you're going to capture all of reality in a mental model or in a story or in a belief system, and you're never going to do that. And even, you talk to someone like Spiros.
I just listened to that. Yeah. Where the theory of everything, and it's not possible.
Yeah.
And along those similar lines, I was thinking when I was listening to that podcast, we all want to find a solution to racism or a solution to sexism. And that to me seems like a very Western viewpoint because, yin and yang, it's like you need the darkness and the light. So maybe eradicating these things isn't the point, just bringing them back into balance.
Well, I think the so much of what this comes down to is that it's about managing and harnessing human nature. And that was, if you look at how, say, the founding fathers thought about society, or how Adam Smith thought about capitalism. I mean, Adam Smith wrote a whole book called The Theory of Moral Sentiments that's all about all the sort of quirks and, really just understanding human nature. He gives the example that, if I hear that 1 million people died in China, I'm like, oh, that's terrible. But if I lose my little finger, it's like a deep personal tragedy.
Yeah.
So there are these massive asymmetries in our psychology. But what Adam Smith understood, what the founding fathers understood, is that human psychology is what it is. Like, you can wish for it to be a different way. Maybe at some point we have the tools to change it, but the reality is it is what it is today. And then how do you design for it? How do you design within those constraints? So you know that power corrupts people. How do you now create a system that manages that problem and have checks and balances? And so in the same way, we can't prevent humans from stereotyping or generalizing or doing any of that. They have to do that. They have to do that because of the Dunbar number. And, we make categories all the time. But what can we do? Well, we can create an understanding that that's okay, that you do stereotype and generalize, but you have to remember that it is a stereotype and a generalization, and be aware of how grounded in reality is. How good is it, that information? So it's the moment that you talk about with your friends from Minnesota where they're like, going off about how terrible Los Angeles is, and then you say, what do you actually know about it? And they say, we don't actually know about it. And then rather than fighting tooth and nail for that stereotype about Los Angeles, they're willing to let it go. And it's the fighting tooth and nail for whatever beliefs we have about people of color or women or, Dutch people who are really an oppressed and misunderstood people. I mean, but it's actually, the Dutch example, like that was part of, I think, in my own understanding of American identity politics, because I didn't grow up here.
Yeah.
So it was so strange. And I was like, everybody's so offended about their minority. And then, I walk around and, there's like Gold Member was a big movie. Mm-hmm. And then there are all these expressions, like, because the Dutch and the English had such a rivalry for a long time, there are actually a fair number of expressions in English that are, being basically
anti-Dutch.
Like, yeah, this
oh, really?
Dutch
like
people.
What?
Like, go Dutch, right? Dutch cheapness.
Is that a reference to cheapness?
Yeah.
I thought it was equality.
Oh, no. It's about cheapness. And then Dutch uncle, who is this, very blunt, but potentially well-meaning character. So there are these little phrases, I don't actually think there's real Dutch prejudice. But the point is that I was like, I could be offended too. Like, if I really wanted to build up this Dutch identity, I could. And the point is that we all have the opportunity to get offended or indignant. But does that really help us work through our emotional baggage, or does it just make us defensive?
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes us defensive.
Yeah.
Living in Europe, like even Norway, which is a very reasonable place, full of nice people, they're way more blunt than we are in America. And so I was just constantly taken aback by what they were saying. And then after a while, I was just like, oh, fuck it. I don't like whatever.
Yeah.
I just don't care. Like, I'm the one American you're seeing today, so I will represent America for you, and we can talk about what's going on, and, but yeah.
And that's the point is that we are always being ambassadors for our group.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of it is that individual responsibility to realize that I have all sorts of beliefs about people that are grounded on very limited information. But then the other responsibility is to recognize that you are representing a whole bunch of things at all times. And, you know, to some extent, there's a tension between, you know, you saying your piece and you doing your thing, and then also recognizing that you are an ambassador in a strange land, and you have to represent that to some extent. And when French people wear Speedos, or when Spiros wears Speedos all over the place, he creates a very particular stereotype of Europeans.
When I first moved to Norway and I went to my job, the Chinese people were like so excited that I was coming.
Mm-hmm.
My boss was like, I've never seen them like this. They were so excited that American was coming. And the first thing they said to me, they were like, you talk like the movies.
Oh, wow.
And of course, I'm from Minnesota and I have a ridiculous accent. I mean, it's not super strong anymore, but it'll come out and people in America would make fun of the way that I talk.
Mm.
And they're just like, oh, it's so great.
That's amazing.
So funny. And then I found myself being really obnoxious in my slang. Mm. And so I try to teach them all these things. And so I'd walk into work and I would say, what's up, deuterinos? Like I never said that in America ever. I'm pretty sure. But I just got so like nationalistic and patriotic and like, this is what America is. This is how we talk.
But you also are, it's, you know, you're being celebrated. You're getting all sorts of good feelings from that. Yeah.
By the Chinese people, not always by
the Norwegians. But I'm excited that there's now a group of Chinese people in Norway who are trapped in the 90s in terms of their stereotype of Americans. They think that Encino Man is the peak of American culture, which it is, by the way, China, if you're listening. I think this is exactly the sort of conversation that we've wanted to have for a long time.
Yeah.
And the point is that, you know, this is great. Now we have people like Kate who are making these ideas much more accessible and making it easier and easier for people to come into. I mean, what's so cool about the internet is you can create these virtual spaces that are built of people from all over the world.
Yeah.
The way I think of it, you know, Katie has this great analogy of humanity's first family dinner, which is very much the same as your break room.
Yeah.
I think of this as like, okay, you're all screaming and shouting at each other. We're going to go into the other room and have a conversation and talk. And then what happens is that there is that FOMO that starts to creep in where it's like, what's going on in that other room? They seem to be like, sounds pretty productive and interesting. And then people start wandering in, And then before you know it, there's only one person left shouting. And then they're like, wow, there's no point to doing this.
Well, and the great thing about Mixed Mental Arts is that we're open to other people's suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, you know, I don't have any credentials to be here. I have a vagina that I carry with me all the time, but like, that's about it.
I only carry mine some of the
time. You left it at home. But, so it's like you come in and you ask a question. We're not going to shout you down. We might point you in a direction where we think you might have things to learn about or question where that came from, but it's reciprocal. So you can do it back to us.
And you should do it back to us.
Yeah.
And I think crucially also, that part of what you realize in terms of teaching is that, you know, it is that old thing about if you ask a question, you can bet that somebody else has that question.
Yeah.
And so the point is that whatever question you have, whatever you want to talk about, the point is this is probably a question that literally hundreds of millions of people, have. And part of what we want to do is evolve better and better tools for answering these questions and for people to be able to make sense of these questions. And I think it's worth, you know, part of what we've been talking about is how this evolves forward is the analogy I've been using is an on-ramp, right?
Yeah.
And so do you want to explain what you think
that the on-ramp?
Means? Yeah, the on-ramp.
Well, just like a easy way to pull people into the flow of traffic.
Yeah.
Like an actual on-ramp.
Yeah. But essentially we talked about the Culture Matters videos before, but so, you know, it might be that we make a series of really fun memes or songs or whatever. And then that leads you to the Culture Matters video. Oh, so that's the next step. And then, you know, then you go to one of Kate's knowledge bombs, which is 500-word blog, but it's all done very fun in a fun way with pop culture references and just sort of, you know, blending all of that pop culture and that science. And then if you're unfortunate, you then go read one of my 5,000-word pieces. And then we're like, that was a waste of time. Why did I do that? Instead, I should just go read the original book. And maybe you do read the book, maybe you don't read the book, but the point is that it's all about creating better and better tools to make it easier and easier for people to access these conversations because, you know, we're 100% aware over here in Los Angeles, that, you know, I, have no life and that I can sit around and read these books all day. And that's, you know, people have jobs, people have kids, people have things to do.
People have Netflix they want to binge.
Yeah, Netflix and chill. And so, yeah, the point is to make it easier and easier and easier for you to engage with and find these ideas.
Well, and I think more fun too.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't have to be always silly and ridiculous, but, you know, lighthearted and also more accessible. You know, you read a book and you can't necessarily get a hold of the author, but you can get a hold of us for better or worse on the internet and we'll respond.
Yep. And we'll appreciate you reaching out and we appreciate feedback and we appreciate criticism. I appreciate, for example, that Atheism is Unstoppable decided to take my Joe Rogan appearance and edit out everything that I said that wasn't a verbal tick. Because that video really brought home for me just how many verbal tics I have. And I appreciate that Rupert has lovingly issued me this challenge. And, you know, Brian has also been mentoring me in this direction. My father has been doing it in a much more Dutch way, where he's like, you need to fucking deal with this. Fuck, 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 fuck. So, you know, all these different cultural approaches all getting me to deal with the log in my own eye.
Well, I think we all need that.
Yes.
I think that you're actually lucky.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this is something that I was thinking about. You know, I have, I think of blog posts and then I realize that it would take 5,000 words to say anything I want to say. So sometimes I don't do them. But one of them that I wanted to do was, haters gonna hate. And I love that. because it is the part of that consequence of that we see the splinter in our brother's eye, but the log in our, don't see the log in our own eye is it actually makes, you know, people who hate you amazing at finding what you're missing and what you most need to work on.
Yeah.
And that's been the amazing experience of the last couple of months with, you know, the various Twitter wars that I've gotten into, is that people are finding all of my faults and they're magnifying them and they're holding them up. And some I can do things about, like my verbal tics. And some I can't do anything about, like apparently I have a hooked nose, but which is a bit bizarre. But, you know, but actually the funny thing even about that one was that at some point, probably Devin Tracy, who's the Atheism is Unstoppable guy, he found this picture of a proboscis monkey.
I saw that.
Yeah. And the things that I randomly knew is that the locals call the proboscis monkey the sunburnt Dutchman.
Oh, really?
So I was like, that is funny. And you don't even realize how funny that is or why. But yeah, the point is that people are going to give you that feedback. And some people, I've had a lot of people who have come into me angry. And what they really want to do is be heard. And once you are like, yes, I have these horrible verbal tics. You are absolutely right. I should work on them. Or, for example, somebody reached out and during the Spiros one, for whatever reason, I was going, a lot. And I didn't realize this at the time. I thought this was being helpful, but the point is that it was actually massively distracting. So now I'm cognizant of that and I'm trying to figure out, okay, how much is that helpful? Is that not helpful? So it's all, I think that's the real opportunity is that it can seem like there's all this hate on the internet, but I say use it.
Yeah.
Use it to
get
better.
Well, and this is learning in real time. Mm-hmm. I mean, none of us are maybe Brian Callen, but like everybody else is just a human who doesn't have any radio experience, know these things, you know, that kind of stuff. And I just lost my train of thought. See, it's learning in real time.
Yep.
It happens.
It happens. But see, where I thought you were going to go with the whole maybe not Brian Callen is that you're going to say that maybe Brian Callen doesn't have anything to work on. Maybe Brian Callen is some sort of god.
That too. I mean, I hope that I never meet him because it'll just be crushing the fantasy that I have in my mind.
No, Brian is great, but he is flesh and blood. yeah, I think that... that was awesome. And I think that's the main thing is that I think it's just important for the community to know that there are a lot of things. One, we're open to having any conversation. If we haven't necessarily waded into a conversation yet, I think there's two things. One, it's because we don't know how to have it productively. And then two, it's also because part of it is that we want to lay There's some idea, and this isn't that we're sitting around planning this out and we've got this planned out 2 years in advance, but part of what I'm cognizant of, partly because I've learned it from Katie O'Brien, is that so much of this comes down to sequencing.
Yeah.
And so we're planning this Culture Matters series out, and the point of that series is to just make everybody aware they have a culture and to give people a framework to be able to even think about that. But then from there, that's a foundation from which we can build into whatever topic of conversation. So I think there's that. And then also three, I think it's important to recognize that the community is expanding. We would love to have you in it. And we need a lot of different diverse talents to really grow this conversation. And that's why we have Kate the Great Fogarty. So yeah.
Yeah. And should we plug the Patreon?
Plug it all, Kate.
I think we should. I mean, you could think of it as giving us money, or you could think of it as investing in your future edutainment, I think is what Hollywood calls it.
Is the portmanteau.
Yeah. But you know, just like, going to Norway for me and learning about Swedish jealousy and how that's helped my life and learning about Descartes' error, which we didn't get to it, but later we can talk about how that's a huge thing for sexism. All these things can help everybody. And so you're just contributing to the betterment of yourself.
Yeah. And whatever, I mean, the key thing is that we know that we're not alone in this, and that these are conversations that we've wanted to have for a long time and not known how to have. And so part of the Culture Matters series is that we want to give you tools to be able to better have them with the people around you, the people in your community, and in fun, approachable ways. And so, that's really the first focus. But, you know, a dollar. You can also now buy t-shirts.
Yeah, I just bought a sweatshirt.
Yeah, what
hoodie.
Sweatshirt did you buy?
I got pink, because I'm a girl. Mixed Mental Arts lightweight zip-up hoodie.
Wow.
I'm super jazzed. I'm so excited.
So you can buy swag, and if you buy swag, it will go to supporting both the Culture Matters series and Brian's $1 million a year cheese habit. So two very important causes. So you know, we know that you may not have cash.
Yeah.
And if you don't have cash, we're just happy to have you here.
Yeah.
And you know, if you want to contribute in other ways, if there are just even being part of the conversation on the forums, that's great.
Yeah. Go do your own cultural confession.
That's right.
Online.
So, yeah. On mixedmentalarts.co, you can follow Kate Fogarty's example and go do your cultural confession. And you know, just even talking about the podcast, leave a review, anything you want to do. But there is, I think for me, it was very interesting, this conversation I had with Chris Ryan, is that part of what's exciting for me is to, I feel like I now have a tribe.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time wandering between them and not very satisfied. And to just sort of realize that you can build your own is pretty cool.
It's super cool.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Hunter Motz.
Kate Fogarty.
Signing off.
You've been listening to Mixed Mental Arts with Brian Callen and Hunter Motz. For more information and past episodes, please visit briancallen.com and mixedmentalarts.club. Also, be sure to follow the show on Twitter @MixedMentalArts. Until next time, bye-bye.